Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Viridian Gate Online, Inquisitor's Foil, by James Hunter and DJ Bodden. Narrated by Daniel Thomas May. Chapter 1. I leaned back and turned my face away as the heavily armored woman seated across from me half-choked and sprayed me with a mouthful of beer.
"What did you say?" she said.
I blinked and wiped my face on my sleeve. "I asked if I could hold your sword for a minute." She sat back in her chair and looked at me like I had idiot written in Sharpie across my forehead.
"You don't handle other people's swords."
"Why not?" I asked, genuinely curious. It was just a piece of sharpened steel, and as a fighter class in an RPG game, I expected she'd loot new gear and sell off the old stuff every few levels.
"I'll hand you my sword as soon as you loan me your man parts for a trip to the brothel."
I laughed. It was infantile, but I was a few beers in, and it had been a rough week. "You called them man parts." I actually snorted, then covered my mouth with my hand. She didn't think it was as funny as I did, though. Her chair slid back, and she drew the sword in one smooth motion, much faster than I thought someone could while sitting that close to me, and slapped it down on the wooden table with a clang. I swallowed. The tavern went quiet as people turned to see what was going on.
"This is my sword, Alan. It's been in my family for 6 generations. My father used it during the wars. My grandfather died with it in his hands."
She blushed.
"My father disowned me after I won it from him. I've killed to keep it."
Her voice was quiet, her eyes distant. Then she looked at me and tapped an etched symbol at the base of the blade.
"This is the legacy he left me, willing or not."
I'd forgotten that the NPCs hadn't just spawned on my arrival. Project Viridian's AIs had been running a full-blown simulation for months, though sometimes the depth of the backstories made it feel like longer than that. I looked at her with the solemnity of the inebriated, and she felt like a glorious contradiction, like I could see through the battle-hardened Templar to the damaged little girl beneath. What did they call that in photography? A double exposure? Exposure, I snickered. Her eyes narrowed. I raised my hands. "I'm sorry, I was thinking of something else. I'm drunk."
"I can see that."
"You just seem like such a badass." Her mouth tightened. I rolled my eyes. "You are such a badass, all right? I mean, look at you, standing there in full armor, and you did that thing with the sword. That was awesome. But, Wendy, your beer's empty, and I'm pretty sure that's a crime." Her mouth quirked. I bit my lower lip and looked up at her.
"You do owe me another beer,"
she said, sitting down, the naked blade still on the table between us. "Yeah, fair point," I said, catching Martha's eye and raising 2 fingers. "At least one more beer after you so graciously gave me some of yours," I smirked. She sighed and leaned forward, resting her chin on her hands, but her eyes were locked with mine, and I felt a little tingle in the back of my brain that had nothing to do with the alcohol. The elegant wolf returned to normal once the patrons were sure Wendy wasn't going to run me through across the table. Martha brought our beers, a honey pale ale for Wendy and the bitter house brew for me. And we talked. We laughed. I didn't use charm or suggestion because that would have felt a bit dirty. It was just a drink that turned into a date. At one point she did this cool, flippy thing with her sword and sheathed it without standing up. Show off.
"You liked it?"
I smiled. Then it was over, and I was a bit sad about that, but I wasn't going to push my luck. I followed her out of the tavern and stuck my hands into my pockets. "Hey, listen, I had a really nice..."
"Walk me home,"
she said. "Okay," I said, my heart trying to squeeze 3 beats into the space of 1. Chapter 2. I followed Wendy uphill, not weaving but deliberate in my quest not to slip on the slick cobbles. It seemed to rain at least once a day in Harrowick, whether it was a constant, frigid sprinkle or a cloudburst that drowned out all the city sounds as it hammered the slate roofs. Unlike New Viridia or even Weirdtide, Harrowick didn't have a standardized system of streetlights. Rather, individual houses hung a small lantern from a hook, usually between the first and second floors. This wasn't enough to keep the entire street lit, but it provided islands of illumination one could navigate between, and roughly defined the wandering road.
"See something interesting?"
Wendy asked. "Streetlights."
"What about them?"
I suddenly felt stupid for getting hooked on such a small detail. "I was just comparing this place to New Viridia. They have oil lamps instead of lanterns."
"They have slaves."
It was my turn to look at her questioningly.
"The lamps have to be filled and lit. In the capital, since they're evenly spaced in the center of the street, the government pays for the oil and labor. They use slaves. It's cheaper to provide room and board than a living wage."
"I see." Wendy snorted.
"In any case, Harrowick is less popular with the nobility. It's too cold and wet, too hard. So there's no slave market. Each resident is required to light a lantern from sunset to dawn, and the price of oil is regulated by the city magistrates, so it's a tax, but the individual is held responsible."
"What's the punishment for not lighting it?" Wendy shrugged.
"In theory, a fine and public service."
"And in practice?"
"Thieves target dark houses, even if they're often the poorest families on the block."
"That's rough. But then, so was slavery. I guessed there was always going to be someone at the very bottom of the ladder. I just didn't feel comfortable with the idea someone was shackled to the bottom rung. We passed through a gatehouse in the first inner wall. The main portcullis was closed, so we used a narrower side passage and our shoulders bumped together. I glanced at her, and we shared a small smile. The guard saluted Wendy as we passed. "You're in the Legion?" I asked.
"Inquisition."
I raised an eyebrow, and she looked at me, suddenly sober and as sharp as a razor. I grinned. "I guess you've had your hands full then. There was a big fight in the Lower East a couple days ago." She huffed.
"I wasn't there."
"Really?"
"No, Alan, I'm making it up just to throw you off guard."
"It just seemed like your kind of thing. You know, sword fights and alarum."
"What's alarum?"
"Usually someone running screaming for people like you to come help." She chuckled.
"Well, I was out of the city. I got back today, gave my report, snuck in a quick training session, and headed to Martha's for a drink. I'm on the path to become an Inquisitor Errant, so I spend most of my time on patrol. Less intrigue, more monster slaying. I like my foes in front of me, within sword reach."
Which was roughly where I was.
"It's not a problem, is it?"
she asked. "Nope. I was intimidated, sure. Little bit turned on, too." I grinned. "As long as I'm walking you home, not to a jail cell."
"The righteous have nothing to fear,"
she said, giving me a wink.
"That's what the Seneschal always says."
I'd met him. Didn't care for him. "He must have a lot of friends." Wendy didn't answer. I knew her type, professionally, from the real world. She was honest, a bit rough around the edges, and she hated politics. She was probably good at what she did, though she would never climb the ranks as fast or far as Beric or Provis had. The streets were brighter behind the first inner wall, and the houses bigger. Some of the lanterns were twice the usual size or burned with colored lights. Others had custom-wrought casings. There were clusters of well-appointed stores and gated residential streets. We passed a patrol of city watchmen. It was all comfortably upper-middle class. My stamina was under 2/3 from walking uphill. It was going to be really embarrassing if I had to ask my date to give me a moment to catch my breath. "You live here?" I asked.
"A little farther."
10 minutes later, we passed through the second inner wall. And I mean, that made sense, right? Her full name was Camilla Favonius, and with a 6th-generation sword, I knew she'd come from money. She just wasn't the kind of rich I'd seen in Osmark or even Provis. Robert had fought for everything he had, and Provis Considia denied his wealth like he resented it. Wendy's money was so much a part of her you didn't notice it was there.
"This is me,"
she said, stopping in front of a triplex apartment door. The unit was about a room wide, the heavy wooden door one of 10 in that block. "Should I say I had a nice time again?"
"I think we covered that. You came here from New Viridia?"
"I did. It was technically true."
"They don't have proper baths in this city, but I have a tub upstairs."
"Is that an invitation?"
"Just being neighborly."
She touched the door handle and I heard the lock click open. Some kind of enchantment keyed to her touch. She walked in and left the door half open behind her. And I hesitated. I'm usually a pretty smooth date, but I'd gotten burned pretty badly from my last almost hookup. Literally burned. After half a minute, Wendy's face reappeared in the doorway.
"Are you coming?"
There was the slightest upward tilt to her eyebrows, a hint of uncertainty, and that clinched it for me. "Yeah," I said. Talia had been an anomaly. She'd been 55 and came from a species that looked down on us humans. Wendy had baggage, but she was normal. I smiled at her and closed the door behind me. The interior of the house was as nice as I'd expected. The ground floor was a sitting room with a couch, leather chairs, and a small bookshelf loaded with a variety of books, from thick leather-bound codices to stacks of thinner pamphlets and magazines. There was a small kitchen in the back. Gentle light radiated from orbs set into the white plaster walls. The ceiling was wide plank set on thick beams spaced 2 feet apart. The floor was a rather stunning herringbone parquet. Each glued piece had beveled edges and must have been a bear to clean, which had been polished to a soft shine. I followed Wendy up the stairs. The second floor must have been where Wendy worked. She had a roll-top cherrywood writing bureau, currently closed, placed against the wall. Next to it were two wooden filing cabinets and another bookshelf. The bookshelf was full of thick books and binders, and each shelf had a padlocked steel strip across it, keeping the books in place.
"Through here,"
she said, and we walked through a doorway in the back, past a training dummy, some weights, and 3 armor stands. The lights came on as Wendy walked in. I stopped in the doorway because letting the light silhouette you in the frame is never a bad idea, especially on a first date. But my attention went straight to the bathtub. It was made of flat strips of wood that had been cut into shape and glued together like 3D paper art. Except that didn't do it justice. The whole thing had been sanded smooth and polished until it looked like it was sealed in a layer of glass. I couldn't imagine what that had cost. Wendy touched a faucet and steaming hot water started to flow. Then she started stripping off her armor and clothes, transferring them to an armor stand. It dragged my eyes away from the woodwork. Her whole body was covered in bruises, both fresh and fading. She laughed at me.
"Never seen a naked woman before?"
"It's not that."
"What then?"
she asked, lowering herself into the tub, sighing with pleasure. She glanced my way, eyes smiling and mouth curled into a smirk. I didn't know what to say. It hurt to look at her. I could still see welts on her arms and shoulders, and she'd been wearing full plate over a padded shirt. Someone hit her as hard as they could. Her expression shifted from amused to annoyed. She leaned her head back and closed her eyes.
"Out with it."
"Don't they hurt?"
"What?"
"The bruises." She winced slightly, but then she said,
"I trust my armor."
I crossed my arms. "You said you came from practice. Why did they hit you so hard?" I knew I was overstepping, but I'd trained with the Legion. This wasn't necessary roughness. It was abuse.
"Get in the tub or get out."
The little voice in the back of my head said, "Walk away." This was trouble, and I didn't need more. But I was also tired. The buzz from the beer had started to fade, and I wasn't looking forward to washing up using the small basin in my room at the inn. Wendy was a big girl and clearly tougher than me. If she didn't want a white knight, I could forgive myself for being selfish. So I took my boots off. Wendy smiled. I finished taking my clothes off. I was an Imperial now, not an American, and this was just a bath, right? I hadn't seen any co-ed baths in New Viridia, but if she was going to pretend all this was normal, I could too. I held on to the edge of the tub and put my toe in. It was steaming hot, but my health bar didn't dip, so I'd probably be okay. I looked up, half straddling the lip, and saw that Wendy had her hand over her mouth to stop herself from laughing. I sighed. There wasn't a graceful way to do this.
Of course there wasn't.
She snort-giggled into her hand, and her eyes were tearing up. I'm getting in.
Please, if it goes on much longer, I won't be able to unsee it.
I stuck my tongue out at her and plopped down into the water. It was so hot my face started to sweat, but I also got a pop-up notification. Current effects. Tired, level 1. Skills improve 5% slower. Carry capacity, minus 10 pounds. Attack damage, minus 3%. Spell strength, minus 10%. Inebriated, level 1. Dexterity, minus 2. Intelligence, minus 2. Strength, plus 5. Hot soak, level 1. Stamina regen, plus 15%. Duration, 30 minutes. I sighed. Okay, this was the right call. I folded my hands on my stomach, closed my eyes, and leaned my head back. There was just enough room for the two of us if I put my knees on one side and she took the other, like a mirrored number 5 or a Greek phi. The water stopped on its own when the tub was full, and we just sat there in silence, soaking in the heat. After a minute or two, she nudged me in the side with her foot. What? I groaned.
Tell me something about yourself.
I lifted my head. We've been talking for hours.
And you've been charming and funny. And vague. I know next to nothing about you.
I put my head back down and turned it to the side. The back wall was a mosaic of New Viridia. I recognized the two hills, the forests, and the mountains to the east. But it was from before the city was built. There was a legion camp on the low ground, laid out in an arc around the smaller of two hills. An imperial force was assaulting a wooden fort on the heights, and arcs of spells and siege engine fire streaked between them. It wasn't that different from human history, except for the magic. I grew up in a city called Philadelphia, but home was always my grandfather's farm. I told her about Imperia Brava, about growing up with my mom and some of the crazier stories I'd gotten from being an HR consultant.
That sounds incredibly boring.
We don't all get to solve our problems by smashing them, Inquisitor.
I'm just a Templar, but even Inquisitors have to deal with office politics. I just don't understand why someone would make it their job.
I laughed. Right? Why did I get into it? It certainly wasn't as glamorous as being Citizen Allen, vanquisher of evil and stuff, though opportunities in monster slaying had been few and far between in California. I guess I was just good at it.
What made you stop?
I died. I had to leave New Viridia. Someone wanted me dead.
Over office politics?
I thought about Jeff's warning about Osmark. Among other things, yes.
So mysterious. You're lucky I'm not that kind of Templar.
She splashed water on me. I chuckled and stroked her shin under the water. She smiled and put a hand on my knee.
What about your mother?
She asked. I squeezed my eyes shut. Oh, God, she's probably a wreck. It's only been a couple of weeks. She frowned.
I mean, I'm sure she'll miss you, but you're only a portal away.
I'm pretty sure she thinks I'm dead.
What? But the messaging interface?
She doesn't have one.
Everyone has one, Alan.
I winced. Well, the one she has, I'm not on it anymore. Wendy whistled.
Some kind of name-change quest?
Yeah, a whole new life.
At least she's got your grandfather. Or doesn't she?
She said, catching my grimace before I could stop it. Pops died a few years back. It was a disease. I knew the NPCs got old and died, but for all its realism, I hoped VGO hadn't taken it as far as importing cancer. But even before that, they didn't talk. Pops had problems with some of her life choices, with who she was. Mom walked away.
Good for her.
I wasn't so sure. It was hard to describe how much I'd seen each of them suffer because of that decision, especially since I'd only been a kid at the time. I think they'd have been happier if they'd talked before he died.
Maybe,
she said, and I knew I'd lost her.
Maybe they would have fought over the same things they had for years.
I didn't answer. I could tell this wasn't about my mom or pops. Family sucks sometimes. The date had been going well until our parents shot the hell out of it. Wendy yawned and rubbed her eyes. After a few seconds, she stood up and climbed out of the bath. She stood on a rune-etched plate by the sink, and steam rose from her body. Then she wrapped herself in a towel.
Listen, Alan, it's been great, but I'm exhausted. Can we call it night?
Sure, I said, half let down and half relieved. I got out of the tub and looked at the drying rune. How do I...
Just stand on it.
Okay. I stood on the rune, barefoot, dripping, and naked, and the air took on a red tint. The water evaporated from my skin like the air was just wicking it away. Thanks. I equipped my clothes from my inventory. At least I was spared the indignity of hopping around on one leg while she watched. When I dismissed the screen and looked up, there was a flatness to her eyes I hadn't seen all evening. I'd blown it, wandered into a topic that would tinge all her memories of me. Or maybe that was just dating. Or accepting the bath. Maybe sharing a bath was the imperial equivalent of the friend zone on Earth. I'll show myself out. She started to say something, then didn't. I gave her a half-hearted smile, then squeezed past her and headed downstairs. The door let me out without issue. I saw her feet on the stairs as I closed it, probably to make sure I didn't steal anything on the way out. No, that's not fair. I'd known her for barely an evening. Of course she'd follow me down, if only to make sure the door was shut and locked. I took a deep breath. This was good. I put myself out there. I had a nice time. It got a little weird at the end, but that's okay. I smiled. I had a hot soak level 2 buff giving me plus 30% to stamina regen, so the walk back to my inn, the double jester, was going to be a breeze. I'd get some sleep, get up early, and figure out what I was going to do with myself. I woke up the next morning with a mild headache. No big deal, just a slight stabby feeling behind my eyes. Pale sunlight streamed in from my single window. I pulled up my list of current debuffs. It was one thing I enjoyed about VGO. I always knew exactly what was wrong with me. WebMD could learn a thing or two. Thirsty, level 2. Health, stamina, and spirit regeneration reduced by 25%. Unwashed, level 1. Goods and services cost 5% more. Merchant craft skills reduced by 1 level. Okay, that was fair. I'd had a bit to drink last night. I slid out of bed, careful not to hit my head on the sloped roof. I wasn't complaining. I loved my tiny room on the third floor of the Double Jester. At the same time, I was well aware the innkeeper had been surprised I'd been willing to rent it. There was a clay pitcher by the wash basin that always seemed to be full. After seeing some of the utility magic in Wendy's apartment last night, it occurred to me that this was pretty neat. Was there an unseen tap under the wash table, or was it a water enchantment that continually drew moisture from the air, keeping the jug supplied and the room free of mildew in one fell swoop? I lifted the pitcher, disappointed there was no pipe or glowing water rune under it. I brought it to my lips. It was cool and refreshing, though it had an aftertaste I couldn't place. I put that down to all the magic people seemed to use around here. After about 6 swallows, the thirsty debuff cleared, and I poured the rest into the bowl and washed my face in it. With the unwashed debuff cleared, I patted my face dry with a hand towel and went to sit at the writing desk. After paying for my meal and our drinks last night, I had 11 gold, 4 silver, and 1 copper left, not enough to retain my citizenship in the Empire during the census. That was a problem. I'd had over 24 gold leaving New Viridia. Money was flowing out faster than it was flowing in. The room was costing me a silver a day, and I spent between 6 and 12 coppers a day on food. If I was careful, I had enough to last 2 months, but I couldn't afford to be careful. Titus told me to learn a trade, upgrade my gear, and train. All of that was going to cost money. Even if I tightened my belt and started sleeping in common rooms, no thank you, I needed a source of income. I pulled up my class skills to see what I had to work with. I winced. Being an illusionist felt like a broken build sometimes. The names at the bottom of the skill tree sounded cool, but that was a long way away. Focusing on refract brought up the following description. Skill, refract. Death is in the details. Refract allows you to modify the appearance of an object or surface or manifest basic shapes. Higher levels will allow for more complex and realistic changes. Skill type, level, voice, novice. Cost, variable, concentration. Range, line of sight. Cast time, instant. Cooldown, none. Effect 1, change the color, luminance, or texture of an object. Effect 2, create simple three-dimensional shapes. I could make colored polygons appear. Don't get me wrong, I'd loved vintage games from the late 20th century like Twin Sen's Adventure or Plants vs. Zombies from the early 21st, and I'd been able to pull off some pretty cool stuff using illusion magic, but every time I looked at the descriptions, I felt like a magician pulling silk scarves out of his pocket. Or a ventriloquist's assistant. My adept-level vocalize skill let me mimic voices, throw my voice, and yell like I was using a megaphone. I'd have made a killing in Vegas. VGO was proving to be more of a challenge. Charm was useful, though. Skill, charm. Some people have the X factor. Charm lets you fake it. People within range will like you more than they should, charge less, and pay better. Skill type, level. Aura, initiate. Cost, 100 spirit. Concentration. Range, 5 yards. Cast time, instant. Cooldown, none. Effect 1. Purchase and sale prices improved by 5%. Effect 2. 1% increased chance of passing an illusion check, stacks, every 10 seconds. If the game was balanced properly and there was an entire subset of the AI called Sophia dedicated to make sure it was, then that 5% improvement in prices would make a big difference in the long run. I just needed to figure out what to buy and sell. I drummed my fingers on the desk and pulled up my stat page next. Here I wasn't doing too bad. I had enough spirit to spam an isolated target with suggestion and refract, or at least distract them long enough to stick something sharp into them. I also had enough stamina to run away, and that had proved to be my best approach to combat in VGO. I was ferocious when cornered, and as squishy as a level 1 slime. I also had some general skills, which included level 8 herb lore and level 4 alchemy. That had to be worth something, even if I hadn't worked out the economics of potion trading just yet. I had connections to the Thieves' Union and the Imperial Legion, and Sir Beric, Seneschal of the Harrowick Inquisition Chapter Hall, knew me by face and name. I probably wouldn't starve, but I'd depended on the kindness of others when I first started out, and I didn't like it. Call me proud, but if my life was going to be this game until they shut the servers down, I wanted to be able to bring my date back to my place and have her swoon over the bathtub, not knock her head on the ceiling. I was close to leveling up. That meant 5 attribute points to spend and a new skill point. And this was a video game for all its realism. Making players live in poverty wouldn't sell subscriptions. There had to be a fetch quest, rat infestation, or crafting order I could fill somewhere in this city. I equipped my clothes, which were clean and fresh from hanging on the magical rack by my bed, amazing, and headed downstairs.
Chapter 3. Sandra set the kickstand on her black, gray, and silver ninja. She pulled her helmet off.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?